Oh, hi. I see you found your way down to the archives. Let's see. What was the case you requested? Ah, here it is. The Ghost of Fountain Lane. A particularly spooky mystery. I think you'll really enjoy it. Let's get started, shall we?
Did you hear something? Is someone there? Hello?
Child, I appear to you a harbinger to the great armies of hell.
A ghost?
It's here! I've just picked it up!
What is this, Mr. Dyer?
Can't you tell? It's the camera. Isn't it something? It's a Manhattan number one.
Oh, I thought we were getting a Kodak. Or one of those cute little detective cameras.
Yes. Well, we had talked about that. Yes. But you see, Miss Elm, I got a deal. A pal of mine...
Is that why it looks so beat up? It's used?
As I was saying, this belonged to a friend of mine. As he just got a new camera.
What kind did he get?
A Kodak.
Oh, does this even work?
The Manhattan is a top-of-the-line camera. Of course it works. I just need to figure out how to use it. Clear my afternoon, Miss Elm. I'll have this up and running in the next few hours.
Oh, Mr. Dyer, before you start, another telegram came from Brighton.
From Inspector Clamp?
He wants Miss Loveday's hotel.
I know what he wants. And I will not let some policeman disturb Loveday's holiday just because he wants her help on a case.
This time he mentioned a commission.
What's that?
He writes that for the use of her time, he is willing to pay a small commission to both Loveday and the Lynch Court Company.
Well, that's different entirely.
Yes, sir.
After all, who am I to dictate how Loveday should spend her holiday? If she wants to take a case, she can. If she wants to turn him down flat... She can do that too. What's important is that it's her decision.
Yes, sir.
In fact, if I know Loveday, and I do, she's probably bored to tears. And if she hasn't already stumbled upon a mystery to solve, she'll be glad enough to have one delivered right to her door. Write Mr. Clamp back and let him know that our girl is staying at the Metropole.
Yes, sir.
Good enough to tell me how you procured my address? I left strict orders that it was to be given to no one.
I only obtained it with great difficulty from Mr. Dyer. Had, in fact, to telegraph 3 times before I could get it. I'm sure I'm awfully sorry to break into your holiday in this fashion, but pardon me if I say that. Looking at the newspapers and memoranda that you've surrounded yourself with here, it seems to be a holiday in little more than name.
I suppose you are right. I thought I was pining for a week of perfect laziness and sea breezes, and so I locked up my desk and fled. No sooner, however, do I find myself in full view of the shore than I shut my eyes to it, fasten them instead on the daily papers, and set my brains to work, con amore, on a ridiculous case that is never likely to come into my hands.
Oh, pray, drop the ridiculous case, and set to work, con amore, upon another far from ridiculous and most interesting.
I'm not sure that it would interest me 1/4 so much as the ridiculous one.
Don't be so sure till you've heard the particulars. A check. The property of the Reverend Charles Turner, Vicar of East Downs, has been stolen under somewhat peculiar circumstances.
How peculiar?
It appears that the Reverend gentleman was suddenly called from home by the death of a relative, and thinking he might possibly be away some time, he left with his wife 4 blank checks signed for her to fill in as required.
Which bank were they to be drawn on?
The West Sussex Bank. and the checks were made payable to self or bearer.
That was foolish of Mr. Turner.
Yes, but listen, there is more to it. Mrs. Turner originally stated that as soon as her husband had departed, she locked up these checks in her writing desk.
And she later amended this statement?
You've got the idea. After further reflection, Mrs. Turner admitted having left the checks on the table while she went into the garden to cut some flowers. In all, she was absent, she says, about 10 minutes. She had not counted them upon receiving them from her husband, and when, as she put them into her davenport, she saw there were only 3, she concluded that this was the number he had left with her.
And subsequently the 4th check was cashed. For how much?
£600. The check had been presented and cashed, in gold, 2 days before Mr. Turner's return. The clerk who cashed it took no particular notice of the person presenting it, except that he was of gentlemanly appearance and on the shorter side.
So indeed, half of the male population of West Sussex.
Be that as it may, I feel sure you will admit that a more interesting case, and one more worthy of your talents, is not to be found.
So much for your interesting case. Now listen to my ridiculous one. Authentic ghost story. The inhabitants of Fountain Lane have been greatly disturbed by the sudden appearance of a ghost in their midst. Last Tuesday night, between 10 and 11 o'clock, a little girl named Martha Watts, who lives in, as I hope, to a shoemaker and his wife at number 5, ran out into the streets in her night clothes in a great state of terror, saying that a ghost had appeared in their boarding house. And the story continues. You can read it for yourself in the London Ladies. Here.
A scare. A vulgar scare. Nothing more. Now, Miss Brooke, I ask you seriously. Supposing you get to the bottom of such a stupid, commonplace fraud, will you in any way add to your reputation?
And supposing I get to the bottom of such a stupid, commonplace fraud as a stolen check, how much, I should like to know, do I add to my reputation?
Think of the misery in that gentleman's house, unless suspicion can be lifted from the young wife and directed to the proper quarter.
Think of the misery of the landlord of the Fountain Lane houses if all his tenants decamp in a body, as they no doubt will, unless the ghost mystery is solved.
Well, I suppose I must take it for granted that you will have nothing to do with the case. I brought the check with me, thinking you might like to see it.
I suppose it's very much like any other check?
Yes, for the most part. See for yourself. I'll have to return it to the station when we are done here. I took it from our evidence room, and it's already been tagged as Evidence A.
Hi there, it's me again, the archivist. I hate to interrupt your story, but our characters have just mentioned the first evidence envelope. If you haven't yet, hit pause and open Evidence A. Observe, take notes, and when you're ready, press play again to continue with the story. Promise me that you'll listen closely for when you open your other evidence envelopes. Good luck, detectives.
Interesting.
If you look closely, you can see the difference in the writing of the words £600. But it bears so close a resemblance to Mr. Turner's signature that the gentleman himself told me he would have thought it was his own writing.
And what do you make of this here on the back of the check?
Those numbers might have been scribbled by anyone. The bank clerk might have been making calculations. £600 divides into exactly 144,000 pennies, as I'm sure you know. It could have been the forger as well, I suppose, although I hardly know why.
Those numbers were likely not written by the person who wrote the figures on the face of the cheque. Look at the zeros. They are entirely different.
That is rather the point of a forgery.
But why go through all the trouble to disguise your hand on the front of the cheque, merely to reveal it on the other side? Who has engaged your services in this case? The bank or Mr. Turner?
Mr. Turner. When the loss of the cheque was first discovered, he was irate. I had a difficult time persuading him that there was no need to telegraph to London for 6 detectives. When, however, I went over to East Downs yesterday to look round and ask a few questions, I found things had altogether changed. He was exceedingly reluctant to answer any questions, lost his temper when I pressed them, and as good as told me that he wished he had not moved in the matter at all.
And it was his change in demeanour that turned your thoughts in the direction of Mrs. Turner.
A man must have a very strong reason for wishing to sit idle under a loss of £600, for, of course, under the circumstances, the bank will not bear the brunt of it.
Some other motives may be at work in his mind. Consideration for old servants, the wish to avoid a scandal in the house.
Quite so. The fact, taken by itself, would give no ground for suspicion, but certainly looks ugly if taken in connection with another fact which I have since ascertained, namely, that during her husband's absence from home, Mrs. Turner paid off certain debts contracted by her in Brighton before the marriage, and amounting to nearly £500. Paid them off, too, in gold. I think I mentioned to you that the gentleman who presented the stolen cheque at the bank preferred payment in gold.
You are supposing a confederate. What sort of woman is Mrs. Turner?
She is young, handsome, and of good birth, but is scarcely suited for the position of vicar's wife in a country parish. She has lived a good deal in society, and is fond of gaiety, and, in addition, is a Roman Catholic, and, I am told, utterly ignores her husband's church and drives every Sunday to Brighton to attend Mass.
What about the servants in the house? Do they seem steady-going and respectable?
It is precisely in that quarter that your services would be invaluable. It will, however, be impossible to get you inside the vicarage walls. Mr. Turner, I am confident, would never open his doors to you.
What do you suggest?
The house of one Mrs. Brown. It is only a stone's throw from the vicarage. In fact, its windows overlook the vicarage grounds. Mrs. Brown, who is a very respectable person, turns over a little money in the summer by receiving lady lodgers.
And how will we get to East Downs?
Does that mean...
I will take the case.
I will drive you, if you will allow me. It is only 7 miles off. Could you be ready in about half an hour's time, say?
I shall need at least an hour or two to get my affairs in order. Call on me at 3:30, and I'll be ready.
What affairs?
My ghostly affairs. If you think that in aiding you, I am abandoning my ridiculous case, you are sorely mistaken.
Blast it. There's no image here. It's all black.
How long did you expose the image for, Mr. Dyer?
I don't know. A while.
Which solution did you use?
How am I supposed to know, Miss Elm? I can't see anything in this room. How the devil is a person supposed to develop an image in total darkness?
It's not completely dark. I can see just enough. See, look here. Here's the one I took. You can see the image starting to develop, can you not?
I can.
Watch your own.
Close the door.
Excuse
me. The light, it'll ruin our photographs.
It's too late now. Come in, Bert. What can we do for you?
Oh, I was singing about at the telegraph office, chewing the rag with Sam. Oh, did you know his sister just cut away for India?
Really? Has she eloped?
Not a bit of it. On her own, some.
Oh. Get to the point, please.
Sorry, Mr. Dyer. It's just that Bert and I have known Sam and Edith since we were children.
Ooh, very interesting, I'm sure. Bert, are you here for any reason other than to pass the local gossip onto your sister?
I'm just getting to that bit, Gov. A wire came in for you, and I told Sam not to worry. I'd hand it off to you before he could say Jack Robinson.
Ah, it's from Loveday. She needs a hand in Brighton. If new camera has arrived, this might be an opportunity to test it. Stop. Naturally, good thinking. Spiritualist photography?
Is Loveday on the trail of a ghost?
It would seem so.
Shall I pack up the equipment for you?
Oh, yes, at once. Can you spare a few days, Miss Elm? You should be the one to go to Brighton. I can't make heads or tails of this camera.
Do you really mean it, Mr. Dyer? Oh, I'd love to.
Oh, take Bert with you. I'll not send one of my staff into harm's way without backup. The two of you can pose as a pair of spiritual enthusiasts. Loveday says you can have her room at the Metropole. She won't be needing it.
I'll jump at the chance to get out of this London particular. And have a butcher's at any honest-to-God ghost. How about it, Elsie? Are you game to take on a new family business? ghost hunters.
Thank you, Mr. Dyer. We won't disappoint you.
See that you don't. Now get a move on, both of you. Let's not keep Loveday waiting.
While I appreciate the ride, Inspector Clamp, if I'm to be undercover here, do you think it is wise for me to arrive in your company?
The story of the stolen check is all over the place, but I don't think anyone has connected me with the affair. I am supposed to be a gentleman from Brighton who is anxious to buy a horse the vicar wishes to sell and who can't quite arrange terms with him.
I see.
If you don't mind me asking, what is it that interests you particularly about this ghost?
You read in the paper that the ghost first appeared at a prayer meeting held in the parlour of that same boarding house?
I did. Perhaps the ghost is a mass hallucination of a religious nature.
Yes, that follows. But then why a soldier? If our ghost is a result of powerful religious oratory, one might expect angels or even devils. But a soldier? That strikes me as peculiar.
Interesting.
And don't forget about the girl, Martha Watts. She saw the ghost in the dead of night, not during a prayer meeting.
Are you suggesting that this ghost might be real?
Nothing of the sort. I'm just suggesting that it's curious.
Perhaps the girl is an excitable type. Hearing of the ghost from her employers, the Freers, she works herself up into a fright and dreams she saw the thing herself.
Perhaps.
He's an American, you know.
I'm sorry? Who is an American?
Your preacher. Reverend Richard Steele, that's his name.
Have you taken an interest in my ghost, Mr. Clamp?
I had a few hours to myself while you were getting your affairs in order. I thought I'd ask a question or two, see if I could round up any useful information.
And have you discovered anything else?
Steele came over from America about 3 years back and was in service at the Wesleyan Chapel in Gordon Street until recently. I understand he had quite a following.
A Wesleyan minister? That is very interesting. I thank you.
Oh, well, it was nothing, Miss Brooke. This is East Downs here. The vicarage is coming up on our right, if you'd care to look.
Stop the carriage, please, Mr. Clamp.
Whoa, girl!
Do these rubbish bins here belong to the vicarage?
I would presume so.
Oof. This one is clearly for kitchen waste.
Are you sorting through Mr. Turner's rubbish?
I most certainly am. And if you don't mind either lending a hand or keeping a lookout, I would appreciate it.
Well, I never.
This one is a bit nicer for a bin. Papers, mostly. No, not this. No. Well, this is interesting. I think I will hold on to this. It is most certainly evidence B.
I take it you have finished with the rubbish?
For the moment, at least. We can continue to the lodging.
And here it is. Nice and close to the vicarage as promised. You made quick work of our drive, didn't you, old girl? Isn't this a first-rate little horse? Have you got a carrot or apple core on you?
I do not.
All that time rooting round in the kitchen garbage, and you couldn't come up with an apple core.
You are welcome to pay another visit to the bins after you've dropped me.
Is that you, Mr. Clamp?
Here's Mrs. Brown. If I may offer you a tip, don't ask her any questions, or she'll draw herself up as straight as a ramrod and say she never listens to gossip of any sort. But just let her alone, and she'll tell you as much as you'll want to know about everyone and everything. I have brought you the lodger I spoke of, a friend of mine who is anxious to get away for a time from the noise and glare of Brighton.
How do you do, Mrs. Brown? I am Miss Brooke. I hope my stay won't cause you any inconvenience.
Not at all, Miss Brooke. I'm only too delighted to get my spare room occupied. A little extra income it brings me here and there. My daughter is the schoolmistress here in the village, and between the both of us, we get by well enough. She's at the schoolhouse just now, but she'll be back this evening. But here, come on in. Mr. Clamp will bring your portmanteau.
No need. I'm perfectly capable of carrying my bag myself.
Then, if you don't mind, ladies, I will depart to the village inn, and I'll call again tomorrow morning, Miss Brooke, to see how you are getting on. Let's get along now, old girl.
Now let's get ourselves inside and I'll put the kettle on. Now that we're settled, tell me all about our friend Mr. Clamp. Is it true that he came to East Downs for the sole purpose of buying one of the vicar's horses? It seems like a long voyage just for a horse.
I believe he's rather fond of horses.
I've heard it whispered about that he had been sent by the police to watch the servants at the vicarage.
Who has said that?
I'm not one to listen to gossip, Miss Brooke.
Of course not.
Have you heard about the lost cheque? Such a terrible affair. Have you seen an account of it in any of the London papers, Miss Brooke?
I have not.
It's really just awful how it happened. The vicar really should not have trusted Mrs. Turner with a single blank cheque. Nonetheless, four of them. And to think she only thought there were three. That is a degree of carelessness that I cannot understand, Miss Brooke.
I agree with you part and parcel, Mrs. Brown.
And it certainly isn't the first time. Claire Turner is a great spender. Her tastes run to extravagance, and mark my words, she spends wildly to furnish it. You should hear how the vicar gets into a temper with her about it. You can hear him going at it clear over here some days. Not that I'm trying to listen, mind you.
Of course not.
And don't you know, Miss Brooke? It was a man that cashed the cheque.
You don't say.
We all know what that means, don't we? A short little weasel of a man, I heard. And Mr. Turner being so much taller than his wife. It's no wonder she's looked elsewhere. But that's enough about that. I'm no gossip, Miss Brooke.
You have a lovely view of the village from this window, Mrs. Brown.
My daughter and I are very fortunate in our situation, we are.
Why, you can see all of East Downs from here. There is the inn and the parish church. But is there no chapel or Catholic church?
Is the parish church not to your liking, Mum?
Not at all. I was merely making an observation.
We're most of us here satisfied with the parish. With the notable exception of Mrs. Claire Turner.
The vicar's wife.
She drives into Brighton every Sunday to attend a Catholic church and say her prayers to candles and images.
Does she really?
Thomas, that's the coachman, drives Mrs. Turner and her maid, Maria Lyle, to Brighton every Sunday. He sets them both down at the corner of a dirty little street in mid-Brighton, and the two go their separate ways. He picks Maria Lyle up there again after he's fetched Mrs. Turner from her church.
They go their separate ways?
Maria Lyle's a queer one, she is. She used to be a Wesleyan and went regularly to all the revival meetings for miles around. What she is now, it'd be hard to say.
And she works for Mrs. Turner?
In a manner of speaking. She used to be the old Mrs. Turner's maid. The vicar kept her on to be his wife's maid after the old lady died, but they say that young Mrs. Turner will have nothing to do with her. So the Turners are just paying her £30 a year for doing nothing.
That is odd.
Now I assume you'll be wanting to see your room, Miss Brooke.
In time, Mrs. Brown. I've been sitting so long in that carriage, I think I might stretch my legs before I lose the light. I can see the vicarage gardens from here. Does the vicar ever allow people to tour them?
Oh, yes, miss. He doesn't mind at all people taking a walk round them. There's a wonderful old cedar over by the pond people have come ever so far to see. I could take you over there if you like.
I won't impose on you, knowing that your daughter is due back soon. If you'll just point out the direction of the cedar, I can find my own way.
Just so, miss. I do like to be here when Josephine gets home. If you enter through that gate over there, in Edbast main house, you'll see
Thank you, Mrs. Brown, for your directions and for the conversation.
Mr. and Mrs. L, Mr. Freer told me you would be coming by. You are interested in our ghost, I hear.
You must be Mr. Steele. We saw the story in the London Ladies and hurried on over. We're with the Society for Psychical Research.
And you've come to see if my spirit is genuine.
That's the long and short of it, Governor.
From this article, we gather that this is a fully embodied spirit, seen by multiple people.
The power of belief can manifest the most magnificent things, Miss Elle.
If we could just get a photograph of this spirit.
And chew the rag with you and some of the other folks here.
The Society will be anxious to publish this phenomenon if it is genuine.
While I don't favor notoriety for my own sake, because this spirit is the manifestation of God's most careful plan. To further spread the word is imperative. Please, there is a prayer meeting tonight. You are more than welcome to attend.
This really is a lovely garden. I'll have to consider coming back when I'm not working a case. And here is the main house, just as Mrs. Brown said. Ah, now if I can get just a little bit closer, perhaps I can hear what this argument is about.
Only a week or two ago, I gave you nearly £500 to pay your debts in Brighton, and now there comes another bill!
I told you, Charles! The renovation must be done with great care, and at times that equates to great cost.
Great cost?! This bill is for wallpaper for the tub room. £72? No one goes in the tub room but you and I, Claire.
But, darling, it's William Morris. And that room is a sanctuary to me. For that reason alone, it is worth the expense. And I promise, this is the last of the bills, Charles.
How can you promise me that when I saw half a dozen new hat boxes in your wardrobe that weren't there a month ago?
Who knew you paid so much attention to my hats, Charles?
Claire, I have given you permission to spend money on this renovation, but only on the condition that no additional money was to be spent on frivolities.
And I haven't, darling. I promised you, didn't I? Now, come look at the wallpaper with me. You'll see why it is really a necessity. Please, Charles.
Oh, I will look at your wallpaper.
No, Charles.
But I must know about these hats. How come I never see you wearing any new hats? My darling Claire, who are you wearing all of these new hats for?
Enough about the hats. I'll meet you there, darling. I've just remembered I left my hat.
Now that is interesting. I wonder...
Excuse me.
Oh, you startled me.
Is that so?
You must be the vicar's wife. Mrs. Turner?
I am. And I would like to know who you are.
I am Miss Brooke. I'm staying for a time with Mrs. Brown. I was on holiday in Brighton, but the crowds...
Hello, Miss Brooke. What are you doing here at the vicarage?
You have such beautiful gardens. And Mrs. Brown said that there was a lovely old cedar just past the main house, and that the vicar had given his permission to see it.
Indeed.
Do you mind pointing me in the correct direction? I seem to have gotten a little lost.
The cedar's off that way.
Thank you, ma'am. Oh, if you don't mind my boldness. How beautiful is that dainty crucifix you are wearing?
Thank you. It was my mother's necklace. She was very devout.
I did not see a Catholic chapel here in East Downs. I'm looking for a place to attend Mass while I'm visiting. Perhaps you can direct me to it?
There isn't one. Brighton is the closest.
Oh, that is quite a drive, isn't it? Thank you, ma'am. Oh, and happy name day.
Excuse me?
Mrs. Brown said that your Christian name was Claire. That's right, isn't it? I suppose I could have made a mistake.
That is my name.
Oh, then it was your name day this past Sunday, was it not?
Oh, yes, of course. Thank you. Your tree is in that direction. Good day.
Thank you. Claire Turner. What a very interesting woman you are.
It is upon Judea that we shall descend. The collection of souls who are deemed worthy by our Lord shall be called to his side. He shall be the one to pass judgment. And it is through the earthly deeds, the charity you show your fellow man, the contribution to your congregation, that you shall be saved from a fiery hell on earth.
Gospel grinder's got a real fire and brimstone approach.
Yes, but it's all talk so far. No ghosts to be seen. Although it's so dark in here, I'm not sure I would see him.
Apollyon, did I say? No, I will give him his rightful name. The name in which he will stand revered in that dread day, Napoleon.
Napoleon? What's he got to do with this?
I gather he's been cast as old Scratch himself.
Man to keep. Apollyon the Mighty. Napoleon the Imperial. They are one in the same.
He's there. It's Apollyon.
Praise
Bert, do you see him too?
See and hear him.
But this isn't a mass hallucination or religious hysteria, it can't be.
I'll say it can't. I'm no Holy Joe, and I've never seen anything more real in my life. Get a picture, Elsie.
Got him. Or at least I hope so.
The spirit leaves us for now. But he stays close to this earthly plane. And let that serve as a warning to all of us. Apollyon, the merciless, awaits.
I'm not sure what I just saw, Bert. It was a ghost, wasn't it?
Honor bright, Elsie. I don't know what else it could have been.
I think we know who that must be, don't we, Miss Brooke? Come in, Mr. Clamp.
Good morning, ladies. How are you both this fine day?
Mr. Clamp, how kind of you to visit us again. Why, I believe you've stopped in here every morning since Miss Brooke arrived. Don't think we haven't noticed, sir.
Oh.
It is a pleasure to see you, Mr. Clamp.
I have brought your mail, Miss Brooke. I have a letter for you from a Miss Elm.
Those would be the friends staying in Brighton, I suppose.
Mrs. Brown, assuming you haven't cleaned up the crockery yet, would it be possible to get a cup of tea?
I'll make a fresh pot.
I have been waiting for this letter. Shall we call it Evidence C? So, at last we see our ghost, Mr. Clamp.
Well, look at that. But you can't trust spiritualist photography, Miss Brooke. It's all a scam, double negatives and the like.
Ah, but I can trust this picture, because these photographers are not trying to hoodwink me. Quite the opposite, in fact.
Miss Brooke, don't tell me that you believe that the spirit of Napoleon is actually haunting Fountain Lane.
Of course not. That whole thing is a hoax. It's all spelled out here in the letter.
Where do you read that? I see that the minister is no longer Wesleyan. He's taken up with the millenarians. Well, that clears up your question about the soldier. The millenarians have attached a religious significance to Napoleon. I believe he plays the part of their apocalyptic destroyer.
Correct.
And Steele has got one of the elders from the Gordon Street Chapel working with him now.
Yes, John Rogers. That is particularly significant, don't you think?
I have to admit, I don't see how. In fact, your friends seem quite taken in by this phantasm. I see no allusions to anything that contradicts that.
Why, it's all there in the coded message, Mr. Clam.
Why, I never...
What's that you said, Miss Brooke? A message?
Nothing of note, I'm afraid, Mrs. Brown.
Is it an entertaining letter? The one from your friend? Perhaps you might read it aloud.
I was wondering if you might like to accompany me on a stroll, Miss Brooke.
I'd be delighted. How kind of you to suggest it, Mr. Clamp.
I've just put the kettle on, Mr. Clamp.
Ah, yes. Apologies, Mrs. Brown. I am just so overcome by the good weather. And naturally, I assumed that Miss Brooke would enjoy it as well.
Oh, yes, I see. In that case, have a lovely walk, dear. And good luck to you.
Good luck?
She believes that you are courting me.
Where the devil does she get that idea?
You have invited me out on a walk 3 mornings in a row. It does not take a detective to deduce your intentions.
Hang it all. But it is necessary for us to communicate about the case.
And I can think of no better cover. Perhaps tomorrow you could bring a nosegay of pansies with you. I shall accept it with great appreciation.
Oh, dear. Half the town is going to think that I have intentions on you.
As half the town is already suspicious that you are a police officer, I think this might be a more useful cover than your story about buying a horse. And now, Mr. Clamp, on to business. What have you found out?
I've been to the Catholic Church in Brighton and asked about Mrs. Turner. The priest there has met her, but doesn't believe that she is in frequent attendance.
As I thought. A devout Catholic would not be surprised to hear that her name day had recently passed.
Then what is she doing in Brighton every Sunday? Perhaps that's when she sees her confederate.
Yes, the local gossip supports that angle. It is rumoured that she has taken a lover, and that lover is the short, weasley-faced man who cashed the check.
Weasley-faced? That wasn't in the description we got from the bank clerk.
The town gossips have invariably added their own details.
Hmm. They are a force to be reckoned with, these small-town gossips. As for your case, with this letter you have solved it now?
I admit I still have a few questions.
Such as?
I would like to know how tall Mr. John Rogers is. I can theorize, of course.
What does the man's height have anything to do with it?
But don't you see, Mr. Clamp? The two cases are intertwined.
Why do you say that?
Think again of the significance of the second man, Inspector. If you were to cast the part of a ghostly Napoleon, what type of actor would you want for the role?
A short man.
Any news in the evening paper about the lost check?
There's not, unfortunately.
I wonder if anything will ever come of it all. It's a great deal of money to lose.
Indeed it is.
And the vicar is not one to let money slip by. You should have heard him shouting at Mrs. Turner yesterday afternoon. He just got a bill for marriage. £19.06 for a wicker armchair.
That is an extraordinary price.
Miss Brooke, come here. Out the window, you can see her. That's Maria Lyle. That's the peculiar woman I was telling you about. The one who poses as Mrs. Turner's maid.
Really? That's her, there in the garden?
Do you see that old summer house over there by the apple trees? Well, every evening at sunset, out comes Maria and disappears into it. And there she stays for over an hour at a time. And what she does there, goodness only knows.
It is a fine evening, Mrs. Brown. While we still have the light, would you be interested in accompanying me on a walk? That old summer house and old orchard fascinate me.
We shall frighten Maria to death if she sees us so near her haunt. But that shan't deter us. I'll just get my bonnet. Mind the gooseberry bushes, mum. They do catch at your clothes, so. My word. What a fine show of fruit the vicar has this year. I never saw pear trees more laden.
Just lovely. I believe I hear someone coming round the path just there.
That'll be Maria Lyle, I'm sure. This is the summer house here.
Oh, but you're...
That's my... Oh!
Maria! Maria, don't run away. We shan't stay here for more than a minute or two.
Do try and overtake the girl and tell her we shall be gone in a minute. I will wait in the summer house meanwhile. I'm sorry to have frightened her away.
Maria! Oh, ridiculous girl.
So this is what you are using the summer house for, Maria. It is your sanctuary. What are these books here? This one is a Bible, naturally. And this one... Oh, my. What a sensational cover. I may not have much time. I'll just make a sketch. And this one... appears to be a diary. Aha! And there we have it. Evidence D.
Hello again. The time has come to open your final evidence envelope. After you carefully examine its contents, it's time to solve the mystery. Jot down your notes, compile your theories, and decide who committed this crime. On our website, just below the audio player you're listening to now, you'll find a place to submit your answers. You've seen and heard all the same things as Loveday Brook. Have you arrived at the same conclusions? When your answer has been safely submitted, hit play and continue on with your mystery.
I pursued that girl all the way to the main house, where she disappeared into the servants' entrance without a backward glance. It's absurd. Why couldn't the woman have stayed and had a chat with us? It wasn't as if she would get any harm out of the talk. She knows I'm no idle gossip, tittle-tattling all over people's affairs.
Mrs. Brown, I'm sorry to say I must leave at once. If you'd kindly have my portmanteau taken to your garden gate, I'll call for it as we drive past. I am going now, at once, to the inn, to see if Mr. Clamp can drive me back into Brighton tonight. I thank you.
Oh. Well, I never.
Mr. Clamp!
Miss Brooke! Well, I wasn't expecting you. Would you sit and join me? I can have them bring out another plate.
I must get back to Brighton with as little delay as possible. Now, in fact, would you be good enough to drive me there?
What is this all about?
I have solved your case, and if you want to apprehend your criminals, we must make quick work of it.
The road is good. It will be moonlight in a quarter of an hour, and with Jackie all rested up, we ought to do it in less than half the time we took coming.
Jackie is the horse?
That's right. The old girl needed a name. Now, where in Brighton are we going?
It will be best to drive straight to the police station. They must take out 3 warrants, one for Maria Lyle, and 2 others respectively for Richard Steele and John Rogers. And let me tell you that these fraudsters would most likely have been left at large to carry on their depredations for some time to come if it had not been for that ridiculous ghost in Fountain Lane.
Bert, look. Here she comes.
Miss Elm.
Miss Loveday.
Bert, it is good to see you. Has the sermon started?
A few minutes ago.
Good. They won't leave before it's over.
Where's Clamp?
He is at the station arranging for the warrants and gathering the men for the raid. I worry that Steele and Rogers will try to flee if we don't apprehend them tonight.
Then you think they've raised enough money?
I think their ghost is getting too hot here in Brighton and that it's time to move on to another town to work the same scam.
And then we'll have lost them.
Exactly.
Shall we wait for the inspector and his bobbies?
No. Let's go in. I'd like to see this ghost for myself. It is a packed crowd tonight.
Each sermon brings a few more people, particularly the late ones. The ghost favours an evening performance. There's a spot just there.
Excuse me, Governor.
Steele is a born orator. The audience is as completely hypnotised by him as if they had surrendered themselves to a professional mesmerist.
Just wait till the headliner.
And all this time, gazing calmly upon the
field of slaughter, with bent brows and folded arms, stands the imperial Apollo. Apollo, did I say? No, I will give him his right name, the name in which he will stand revealed in that dread day, Napoleon. A Napoleon, it will be, who in that day will stand at the embodiment of satanic majesty. Out of the mist, suddenly he will walk, a dark figure with frowning brows and firm set lips. A man to rule, a man to drive, and a man to keep. Apollo the mighty, Napoleon the imperial. They are one and the same.
He's there. It's Apollyon.
The mighty Apollyon is among us as a woman. We must hasten our journey to Judea. Only 144,000 living saints can be called up to heaven.
The hysterics are catching. There's another woman off now.
It's high time this sort of thing was put a stop to.
Police! Everyone, stay where you are. That's our man there.
The inspector will get Richard Steele, but our ghost is going to get away.
He's offing it out the window.
Bert, follow him. Elsie and I will head him off. Which direction is the alley?
Just over there. Bert!
Oh, I've got him. Oh, boy, I could use a hand keeping him.
Oh, boy, I... Blind!
That should keep him for a while.
What did you do to him?
She kicked me.
It's nothing serious. He'll be quite all right.
Good work, Detective. Detectives, we'll take it from here.
All right, Loveday. You've kept us all in suspense for long enough. Out with it. Tell us, step by step, how you came to connect a stolen check with the ghost of Napoleon.
Very well. Let us begin with the ghost. As the spirit's first appearance coincided with a prayer meeting, it seems to me certain that the soldierly spirit must have religious significance.
Yes, yes, I understand that. The millenarians have made Napoleon into their Antichrist.
One of the pillars of millenarian faith is that 144,000 living saints would be caught up to heaven and spared the apocalypse.
There's too much religion in this case already.
And the number 144,000 was scribbled on the back of the check.
Ah, yes, I see. The connection is clear. But to what purpose?
Why does anyone put on a gaff? To run a con.
Exactly. And so we must ask ourselves, how are these 144,000 saints divinely selected?
I think I can hazard a guess at that by making a financial contribution to the cause.
One is never deemed so worthy as when one pulls out his checkbook.
So this Steele rustles up a ghost to add conviction to his apocalyptic predictions and scare his congregation into making a contribution to ensure their devotion. And then, when he's raised enough cash... closes up shop and moves the whole show down the road.
That's right. But the ghost only works as a two-man con. Steele needed Rogers. When Rogers agreed to leave the Wesleyan Church, the two of them dreamed up this plan together.
And what about this girl, Martha Watts?
Her ghostly encounter was pure accident. She awoke in the middle of the night to witness Steele and Rogers rehearsing their ghost track for the next day's sermon. A trick that was confirmed by the photographic evidence taken by spiritualist photographers.
Yes, we found all the things you asked about, Miss Loveday, but I'm still not sure how they add up to a ghostly vision.
They used a theatrical technique, Pepper's Ghost, just like in the Dickens play. You might have noticed John Pepper's book on Mr. Steele's bookshelf. That, combined with the marks on the carpet, left by something weighty but very thin...
like a large piece of glass.
And take into account the ghost's preference for a night performance...
when the lights are low...
and the unique layout of the parlour, and you have the perfect environment for a theatrical illusion. I imagine Mr. Steele called at a number of lodgings before he found a room with an alcove like the parlour of the Fountain Lane boarding house. From the drawing you sent, it is the perfect dimensions for Pepper's ghost.
So, John Rogers played the part of the ghostly Napoleon.
And he was the man who handled the finances, the short man who cashed the cheque.
Aha! And now we return to the missing cheque.
As you know, Maria Lyle was the one who stole the cheque.
I can't help but feel bad for her. She was a zealot. She was conned by Steele just like everyone else.
I'm afraid her sins run deeper than religious mania. I first became suspicious of Maria Lyle when I learned that she was earning the salary of a maid but performing no services. Mrs. Turner didn't care for the woman. Why not fire her? I believe that Maria had information about Mrs. Turner that the lady did not want her husband to know. And when she saw her opportunity to help her beloved congregation, she did not hesitate to make an even larger demand.
She blackmailed her.
Maria was a victim, but not an innocent one. She was a religious zealot, that much is assured from her diary entries and reading material. I was certain that her cause was millenarian when I saw that she was reading several of the same volumes that you photographed on Richard Steele's bookshelf, and because of her mention of the 144,000 souls in her diary. I imagine Maria Lyle thought she was doing a godly service by despoiling Mrs. Turner of some of her wealth and devoting it to what seemed to her a holy cause.
What dirt did she have on the old bird?
Did Mrs. Turner have a lover?
Despite what the local gossips say, no, she did not. Mrs. Turner was in debt, to a very alarming degree. Her weekly visits to Brighton were not to attend the Catholic Church. They were to shop. Her husband had settled some of her debts, but I suspect he did not even scratch the surface of what she owed. And I imagine he had his suspicions about her as well.
And that was why he called off the investigation into the stolen check so quickly.
Mr. Turner was a man of quick temper. He called the police in the first flare of indignation, but when he had time to think about it, he, of course, saw that the likely party was his wife.
How did the maid find out?
Maria Lyle rode into Brighton with Mrs. Turner every Sunday. I imagine she followed her one day and saw that instead of attending Mass, she headed straight to the shops.
So Mrs. Turner is not entirely innocent either.
Not in the least. It is her handwriting that filled in the amount on the check. Or rather, her copy of Mr. Turner's hand. She had been practicing his signature, among other things. It is possible that Mrs. Turner had intended to cash the check herself, but was put off by her maid's demands. With her plans upset, she had to become more resourceful.
How do you mean?
Mr. Turner is a fool if he thinks that it costs £72 to wallpaper a bathroom. £12 is more likely, with a line added to the top of the one to turn it into a seven. She was doctoring her renovation bills and pocketing the difference.
It sounds like Mr. Turner has embarked on a very expensive renovation.
I must say, even if his wife is doing the purchasing, a man should not be that ignorant of the price of goods for his own house.
Maybe the fella's choosing to be a mark?
That's absurd.
He did shut down the original investigation. Maybe Mr. Turner chose to turn a blind eye for love.
If that is what love is, I think I'm better suited as a spinster.
That is a very apt transition. Miss Elm, would you bring in Loveday's gift?
You've gotten me a gift?
Of course not. I pay you for your work. That is gift enough. No, this has been sent.
Well, not exactly sent. He wired and asked me to pick it out.
He?
Flowers for you.
Ah, pansies.
Pansies mean thinking of you.
Mr. Clamp has sent these.
Yes, we've all deduced that by now. And what does the card say?
We never would have cracked the case without your brilliance, Miss Brooke. The Brighton Police Department would be lucky to have a lady inspector like you on its team.
Aww, I think the inspector's sweet on you.
I think Mr. Clamp wanted to express his appreciation and found a thoughtful way to do it. He knows that I'm fond of pansies. Flowers do not always denote a romantic situation. He would be just as likely to send a bouquet to his horse, in fact.
Well, when you put in a request for another holiday to Brighton, we'll all know the real truth.
My relationship with Mr. Clamp was amicable, but purely professional. And I assure you, I have no intention of being wooed away from my career.
Good. You'd be wasted in a marriage.
And what do you mean by that?
I've seen plenty of smart young women married off to respectable, kind, and even well-meaning gentlemen. And do you know how those women spend the rest of their days? Washing up, raising children, and mending clothes. Unless you'd like to be cooped up in a small house with an endless pile of socks to be darned sitting in front of you.
I have no talent for knitting.
And you have endless talent for sleuthing.
You needn't worry about me, Mr. Dyer. I shall be solving mysteries until the end.
Hear, hear.
Even if the rest of you are stuck at home darning socks.